More than 11,000 scientists signed a petition calling for population control as a means of combating climate change. In an article published Tuesday in the journal Bioscience, the scientists wrote that planet Earth is, quote, facing a climate emergency. They argued that population control was a necessary response to this emergency, writing, quote, the world population must be stabilized and ideally gradually reduced.
We are in the beginning of a mass extinction.
When our foundation first started up, it was focused on reproductive health. That was the main thing we did because I thought, you know, population growth in poor countries is the biggest problem they face.
Well, over this decade, we believe unbelievable progress can be made, both inventing new vaccines and making sure they get out to all the children who need them. The benefits there in terms of reducing sickness, reducing the population growth, it really allows the society a chance to take care of itself once you've made that intervention.
What the developing world does not need is more children.
And I think that was the biggest aha to Bill and me when we got into this work, is we asked ourselves, of course, the same hard-nosed question you'd ask, which is, if you get into this work and you start to save these children, will women just keep overpopulating the world? And thank goodness the converse is absolutely true. So they don't do that, because women say to themselves, they want two children to survive into adulthood. If she knows that two will survive into adulthood, she will naturally bring down her population. And so as soon as she starts to see that getting them vaccinated or keeping them alive during the birth, she won't have as many children. That's what we just heard from this group as well, that the older women had had more children, hoping more would survive, but the younger children, younger women are starting to plan for smaller families because they know they'll live.
They all said they wanted three.
Yeah, which is fantastic. That's what you want. Yeah.
And so if you understand that there's a high likelihood that your child is going to survive, you believe they'll have fewer.
Absolutely, and we're seeing that play out in all the population numbers across the globe. In fact, the population rates are coming down faster than had been predicted 10 years ago.
One issue that really grabbed me as urgent were issues related to population.
Well, I mean, we haven't invented new ways of raising the death rate. Famine, pestilence, and war, I mean, those are the ones we have. They manifest differently depending on the technology that you're using, but that's the way. And it won't be just one thing, I don't think. It will be, it'll be a variety of things.
We find ourselves confronted not by an ideological threat or an expansionist design of a military power, but by the rising tide of global problems that threaten mankind's very survival. We face a tidal change we can hope to manage only through the spirit and mechanisms of international cooperation. The full panoply of threats to our future security and prosperity, the proliferation of deadly high-tech weapons, the accelerating degradation of our planetary environment, economic protectionism and unfair competition, overpopulation and migration, narcotics and aid, these all require, Mr. President, global solutions. Overpopulation, global solutions. Overpopulation, global solutions. The United Nations, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, the Marshall Plan, the World Health Organization, and a host of other worthy UN agencies.
That's a trade-off society is making because of very, very high medical costs and a lack of willingness to say, is spending $1 million on that last 3 months of life for that patient, would it be better not to lay off those 10 teachers and to make that trade-off in medical costs? But that's called the death panel, and you're not supposed to have that discussion. So you, of course,
well, that's an interesting thing you just said, which is just the last 3 months in life for one person or something, because we haven't had a discussion of how to allocate that money, it means we lay off three teachers to do so. I mean, in other words, we
That's
haven't
right.
had
Society's
this type of allocation.
Making, we're making that trade-off because of huge medical costs that are not examined to see which ones actually have no benefit whatsoever.
Well, wait,
and because of pension generosity, we will be laying off over 100,000 teachers, which, I'm very much against that.
And then the big political and economic question of the 21st century will be, what do we need humans for? Or at least, what do we need so many humans for?
I do know that at this time, unless now we think of what America is going to be like in the year 2000, and do something about it to stop that pressure, we're going to reap the whirlwind. Because look at what the year 2000 will be. If the present trends continue, 115 million people, this increase in population, most of it's going to go to the cities, that's the trend. And our cities are going to be choked with people. They're going to be choked with traffic. They're going to be choked with crime. They're going to be choked with pollution. And they will be impossible places in which to live, and the explosions will be even worse.
Not doing it will be catastrophic. We'll have 8 degrees, we'll be 8 degrees hotter in 10, not 10, but in 30 or 40 years, and basically none of the crops will grow. Most of the people will have died, and the rest of us will be cannibals. Civilization will have broken down. What the few people are left will be living in a failed state like Somalia or Sudan, and living conditions will be intolerable. The droughts will be so bad, there'll be no more corn growing. Not doing it is suicide. Just like dropping bombs on each other, nuclear weapons, is suicide. So we've got to stop doing the two suicidal things, which are hanging on to our nuclear weapons.
And global emissions.
And then after that, we've got to stabilize the population. When I was born,
what's wrong with the population? I mean,
with too many people. That's why we have global warming. We have global warming because too many people are using too much stuff. But if there were less people, they'd be using less stuff.
I was wondering if you think it's a good idea to reduce 90% of the population because we are being overpopulated by a lot of...
90%.
80? Prince Philip said 80, sir. I go with 85.
I think 2 billion is about right.
Right, me too. Thank
One
you.
Child family.
Exactly. One child policy.
Ben, can you speak about your population control, saying you wanted to reduce the population to 95% extermination? You said you want a one-child policy, but you have five kids. It doesn't make any sense.
You're not doing anything.
The youngest one is 40 years old.
All right, but understand.
And the world population then was 3 million.
But that's what the Nazis did with eugenics, sir.
Sir.
They wanted to destroy humanity.
Pay detail.
In 1996, you were quoted as saying that the world should be reduced by 95% ideally.
World
population, correct.
For that, I believe in stabilizing the population, but I might have said that. I don't know. 96 was a long time ago.
Yes, it was, sir. But you are the nation's largest private landowner. So wouldn't that be a contradiction?
Acres are concerned, not value. A lot of desert in there.
Yeah, but if the world is too populated, and you are the U.S.'s largest landowner, isn't that a contradiction to want the world to be depopulated by 95%?
No, because I've had lots of 50,000 bison on that land. I bought it so we could bring back the bison. They were at the verge of extinction.
But, sir, what's more important, human race or the human race or bison?
I saw somebody tweeted about this issue of George Magazine. Yes, and you see on the cover here how it says, Bill Gates talks to John Kennedy about Murdoch, money, and world domination. You've also recently launched Slate. As you get deeper into the information business, will your own views color the content of the news you provide? I have my personal views. Then there's Microsoft, a company that gets involved in very few political things. My own views are those you'd expect from somebody who feels like he's been very, very lucky and that the resources under his command are really society's resources. And I have to be clever about how I'm going to funnel those back in. I fund education projects. I fund population control.
First, we've got population. The world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. We get to see a lot of things. We travel to Africa, meet with scientists. We see a lot of things that are going very well, things like reducing childhood death and improving the nutrition.
All the stuff you don't like, I can speak honestly. So usually speaking, something which happened in the past could happen again, generally. So that could happen, or epidemics. I mean, I don't know what it will be, but in one way or another, we are so far globally, we are so far above the population and the consumption levels which can be supported by this planet that I know in one way or another it's going to come back down. So I don't hope to avoid that. I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way. Peaceful. Peace doesn't mean that everybody's happy. The planet can support something like a billion people, maybe 2 billion, depending on how much liberty and how much material consumption you want to have. If you want more liberty and more consumption, you have to have fewer people. And conversely, you can have more people. I mean, we could even have 8 or 9 billion, probably, if we have a very strong dictatorship, which is smart. But if you had a smart dictatorship and a low standard of living, you can have a, but we want to have freedom and we want to have a high sentence, so we're going to have 1 billion people. And we're now at 7, so we have to get back down. I hope that this can be slow, relatively slow, and that it can be done in a way which is relatively equal, so that people share the experience. But that's what lies ahead.
The beginning of 20th century, we were just 1.6 billion people. Now, 2019, we are 7.6 billion people. Now, they are saying by 2050, we will be 9.6 billion people. Why are we making these predictions? Why don't we have a plan? Why don't we say in the next 50 years we will be 4.5 billion people? Are we willing to address this? This is what needs to be addressed. It may look like there are many problems, but actually there's only one problem. We are nice, but we're just too many. This we need to understand. There is no space for any other creature to live on this planet simply because we are so many and our footprint is so big. So we are trying to reduce the size of our footprint, I understand that. But believe me, it is much easier to control human population than human aspirations. You cannot control human aspirations. You can easily control human population if everybody is focused on that. The nations, the religions of the world, various community leaders, everybody, if they are focused on seeing how to bring down the population of this planet, human population, so that other populations can live. Because we need to understand this, this planet will perish if all the insects die today, within 4 to 6 years' time. If all the worms die, within 1.5 to 2 years, all life on this planet will perish. If all the microbes die, probably within hours, this planet will perish. But if you and me disappear, this planet will flourish.
Ironically, however, the very innovations that are making possible dramatic improvements in human well-being are also creating new problems which raise the specter of an alarming and possibly catastrophic disaster to the biosphere we live in. And herein lies the dilemma that we all face. Let me illustrate. Improved public health has caused the world's infant mortality rate to decline by 60% over the last 40 years. In the same period, the world's average life expectancy has increased from 46 years in 1950s to 63 years today. This is a development which, as individuals, we can only applaud. However, the result of these positive measures is a world population that has risen during the same short period of time geometrically to almost 6 billion people and could easily exceed 8 billion by the year 2020. The negative impact of population growth on all of our planetary ecosystems is becoming appallingly evident. Unless nations will agree to work together to tackle these cross-border challenges imposed by population growth, overconsumption of resources, and environmental degradation, the prospects for a decent life on our planet will be threatened. The recent UN meeting in Cairo is appropriately focused on one of these key issues, population growth. But the controversies which have erupted at the conference illustrate the problem of coming to grips with issues that are deeply divisive and which have a profound moral dimension. The United Nations can and should play an essential role in helping the world find a satisfactory way of stabilizing world population and stimulating economic development in a manner that is sensitive to religious and moral considerations. Economic growth is, of course, an inevitable corollary of a growing population and is essential to improved standards of living. But without careful coordination, unrestrained economic growth poses further threats to our environment. This was a major subject of discussion at the conference in Rio de Janeiro on the environment 2 years ago. The focus then was on sustainable growth and global development. It was pointed out at the conference that growth is most efficiently managed by the private sector, but regulation of the process by national governments and international bodies is also needed. And once again, the United Nations should certainly be among the catalysts and coordinators of this process.
We have to get the death rate and birth rate in balance, and there's only two ways to do it. One is to bring the birth rate down, the other is to push the death rate up. That's the name of the game. You've got to start on population control instantly to have any kind of results decades ahead. This means that there's a fantastic inertia built into the system. That's why biologists are so desperately interested in getting population control underway as early as possible, hopefully 25 years ago, because there is such a tremendous lag time built into having any kind of success at cutting seriously into your growth rate or bringing about stability. If we're to solve the world problem, get the overdeveloped countries de-developed, and for the first time, try and help the underdeveloped countries, that it's going to set us back, say, in the United States, an equivalent of at least $50 billion a year into the foreseeable future. That's the cost of survival. For the first time, we have got to really try and help the rest of the people in the world. And that means a tremendous effort on population control, which will mean training many, many sociologists, anthropologists, and so on in the overdeveloped countries and sending them down there to try and get the job done. It's going to mean really helping them with their agriculture, not trying to build the exports of American agribusiness of incredibly dangerous pesticides and synthetic nitrogen fertilizers and so on, but going down there and trying to help them to solve their agricultural problems in ecologically sensible ways. For instance, if you mechanize Indian agriculture, if you should be able to do that, you would destroy the country. What would happen? You would force all kinds of people off the land. They already have extraordinarily serious urbanization problems because there's nothing for people to do in their cities. Some of their cities are growing in the underdeveloped world at 7 and 8% a year, doubling their size every 10, 15 years or less. If you mechanize their agriculture, you'll cause a social disruption the likes of which the world has never seen. You've got to find ways to develop their agriculture and keep it labor intensive. All kinds of problems like this. But fundamentally, what we want to do is stop population growth there as well as in the overdeveloped countries, see to it that they get decent diets, decent housing, decent medical care, and change the world food, trade situation so that they can have access to those products of industrial society that really make for a high standard of living, not for a large GNP, but for a high standard of living.
I mean, think about it for a minute. What contribution to the human future is going to be made by an undernourished kid now in Kosovo or in Ukraine or in many parts of Africa, and so on? The people in Athens did quite a job in moving what we thought of sometimes as Western civilization forward. I think Athens at the time had about 50,000 people. China today has more than a billion, although they have some very fine scientists and so on. Certainly, none of them are making the kind of contributions that the Athenians made, considering the total circumstances. But basically, every politician has to say, my God, we only grew 2% last year and we want to grow 3%. I think there'll be some hope for the world when the president of the United States and the president of Russia each get up and say, my God, we only shrank the enterprise by 1% last year. We've got to shrink it by 3% a year, because what you have to say, if it's a real Earth Day, is the human enterprise has to be shrunk, that it's too big, and we have to humanely shrink it.
We cannot hide away from human population growth because, you know, it underlies so many of the other problems. All these things we talk about wouldn't be a problem if there was the size of population that there was 500 years ago.
Always. All the religious groups are against me because I'm talking about population. They want more souls. I want less on the planet.